I think the bottom line when you are considering the predictors of response to targeted therapy is the premise that if you have more target, you should have more benefit. So any data that departs from this premise should be looked at with suspicion. Let me give you kind of a proof of principle of that concept. In B14 NSAP trial, looking at placebo versus tamoxifen, if you look at the tamoxifen arm of the patient, if you look at the amount of the target with the right assay, you should expect this kind of diagonal curve that shows poor prognosis in low ER and good prognosis in high ER because it's predictive of a response to tamoxifen. But if you look at the data generated by immunohistochemistry done centrally, maybe I did it wrong, but essentially what it shows is the completely nonlinear correlation between amount of the ER by protein measurement and the degree of benefit. If you look at the same data measured with real-time PCR as part of the Oncotype assay, there was an absolutely linear correlation with very strong interaction p-value when you looked at placebo versus tamoxifen. So we do have a proof of principle data that shows that if you measure correctly, the amount of the target should be predictive. Now, when you look at the B31 data, the trastuzumab data in adjuvant setting is totally heretic in the sense that there was absolutely no interaction, no matter how you look at the data, by DNA copy number or amount of the protein. So the suspicion here is that maybe the assay is really bad. So there was two presentations at the San Antonio meeting by NCCTG and the other one from Hera trial, essentially looking at the same question. And the data is very striking in the sense that the trend for benefit seems to be there regardless of how you dissect the data, by immunohistochemistry or FISH, or the presence of the polysomy or aneuploidy in the chromosome 17. So even in the immunohistochemistry negative patient, there seems to be a trend for benefit. And if you look at the copy number or DNA, the FISH by ratio, there was no trend for any interaction showing less DNA amount, less benefit. And the other question was polysomy 17 because of the CAGB data presented by Dr. Kaufman showing that in advanced disease setting, maybe polysomy was the determinant for response, but in adjuvant setting in the NCCTG data, there was no interaction. So if you look at NSAP data looking at polysomy 17, and we have exactly the same finding, no correlation with degree of benefit. So regardless of whether you have polysomy 17 or not, there was a benefit. In the HERA trial, they also looked at the central assay result. In this case, everybody had to be central assay positive to be eligible for the trial, either by IHC or FISH. So you cannot really look at the real negative cases. But regardless, you could look at different categories defined by immunohistochemistry or FISH, and you can see that there was no interaction between any assay result and the degree of benefit. And here is another look at the data similar to the NCCTG data. There seems to be no interaction between amount of the DNA copy for HER2 and degree of benefit. In fact, actually, there seems to be a trend going the opposite direction, that the high copy number, less benefit. Obviously, there is interaction p-value is not significant. So in B31 study, if you dissect the data in any way that you want, they are significant. No evidence for the interaction. So the scientific question there is it a testing issue that maybe FISH and immunohistochemistry is just a bad assay, similar to what we saw in B14 for estrogen receptor staining? Or is it just because of the artifact of subset analysis, that imbalance of certain clinical factors or other covariates that we don't understand? Or is there a completely different mechanism of action between the trastuzumab used in adjuvant setting versus metastatic setting? So we first examined whether we can actually prove that our central assay was wrong. So what we did was we did a microarray analysis on 400 cases randomly selected from B31 and look at the differentially expressed genes between central assay negative versus positive disease. Now, if you map that data to each chromosome, so 44,000 probe set to each chromosome, and now plotting the distance between the center of the chromosome is the degree of difference, and then the color represented by blue color is extremely significant difference. And you can see that the only place among all chromosomes in tumor cells, the only place where there is a coordinated underexpression of genes is in chromosome 17 HER2 locus in these tumors that we call central assay negative. So they do not have HER2 amplification biologically. So they are really, really negative cases. And if you look at individual RNA level, for example, HER2 compared between central assay negative versus positive, the p-value is zero. So even after adjustment for 44,000 comparisons. So this is true difference. There is an underexpression of HER2 gene, as well as if you look at adjacent gene in the same amplicon, again, very significant underexpression. So there is a direct biological evidence that the assay was not wrong in calling what it's supposed to be. These are FISH negative cases in reality. And we did another assay, what we call branch DNA capture assay, for the RNA. Essentially, when you look at the amount of the RNA for HER2 in HER2 negative by FISH and IHC, or positive by both, or either of them positive, there's a linear correlation. But you can see that when you look at other trials, such as B30, and randomly select the cases and do the FISH, you can see that the distribution of the HER2 signal in what's called HER2 negative in the trial is identical to the negative cases in B31. So there is no selection difference. Although they were originally called positive by some lab, indeed they have no difference HER2 RNA level-wise from any HER2 negative cases in any other trial. But you can see that there is a high overlap between the HER2 FISH negative cases and FISH positive cases. So there is a possibility that if you measure RNA level in the correct way, that maybe we can find a better cutoff than what FISH shows. We did a microarray analysis, so we looked for other genes that are actually predictive for Herceptin response. We found about 300 or more genes that interact very significant level with Herceptin benefit. Here's one example in the c-MYC locus. It's not c-MYC itself. That has a linear prediction or correlation with a Herceptin response. It's the upper one-third level, very high degree of benefit, lower one-third, almost no benefit. But there are about 300 of them, so and they intersect with HER2 RNA at right angle. So there's no correlation between the two, and we don't know which one will be actually more predictive when you measure it correctly. This might be all because of the way that we are measuring all these assays. You know, if you measure it with PCR, maybe HER2 RNA might be more predictive, for example. So a lot of research has to be done in this way. One promising technology that was presented at San Antonio was the VeriTag assay, or proximity assay. Essentially, it works by this principle. If you have two different antibodies targeting a molecule at about 200 nanometer apart in physical space, and the antibodies are designed in such a way that one has a, what they call molecular scissor that can be activated by red light, and the other one has a reporter that can be measured on the mass spec. And essentially, when they are very close each other, then the seizure will cut this reporter from this antibody. So you can actually demonstrate the proximity of two different molecules or single molecule, and then you can quantify this amount of the proximal proteins. So it can be looked at for the total amount of the HER2 if you have two antibodies binding close to each other on the same molecule and just have a very quantitative assay. Or you can target two different molecules, let's say HER2 and HER3 or HER2 and HER2, and when they are only making the heterodimer or homodimer, then they will cut out the reporter so you can measure them also. So on this poster, essentially they show that they can measure that in the paraffin block and show the correlation with not only in the cell line but in the clinical samples. And it seems to be a highly reproducible assay on its own when you compare with each on its own. And if you compare with the immunohistochemistry in the paraffin block or FISH, there is a linear correlation, but the correlation is not perfect. We see the same situation for the RNA. The scatter is fairly wide, and when you compare the RNA level with this protein assay, there's a linear correlation, but there is a scatter. So which one is more linear, I think, will be the final determinant of which assay is the best. So what they show in this study actually is that when they looked at the so-called HER2 positive patient by these assays, the amount of the total HER2 protein itself seems to be somewhat prognostic although it is a highly exploratory analysis, it's hunting for the cutoff point. So this needs to be validated. So we are doing a study in B31 looking at about 800 cases, and we are currently analyzing the data. What we know is that there is a good correlation with the RNA level. Then RNA level was not very predictive of the response. So we expect that it's not going to be predictive of response either, but we'll have to see.
Okay, thanks.